Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
From 9-11 to 9-15, a financial 9-11 has hit America. Who did it? Make believe you're reading a novel, and you read about an economic meltdown in another country. You read about people who were involved in it. 20, 30 years later, they're writing books saying, well, when the collapse of 1878 occurred, it occurred because J.P. Morgan did this. Or Rockefeller did that. Now it's happening and suddenly no one did it? It happened by itself? Are you people crazy? Nobody's benefited from this? No one's profited from this? And you call that free market capitalism? You're insane. If you buy the notion that this is free market capitalism, you don't deserve a country. You deserve to live in a prison camp because you have the mind of a slave. Somebody noticed that although the market went down 500 points, and of course Lehman Brothers bankrupt, we don't have to say that, the currency of the United States is quite strong, as are other currencies. Why was there no drastic selling of the dollar? Well, there are numerous reasons for that, but here's one for you that you won't read in the Wall Street Journal, owned by Fox News parent company, who fears to tread where it may in some ways step on toes that could have financial impacts. Here's one for the record book that maybe some geniuses out there will agree with or disagree with. Why would this happen? If the stock market took a 500-point loss, why has the dollar strengthened? Well, because markets are controlled and manipulated by a very few people. Very few people have the resources and the inside knowledge to manipulate whole markets, as was done over the last few months under George Bush's Wild West Wall Street, where all regulations were taken off, all regulators were sent home. So if a pirate makes several hundred million or several billion dollars in some of these drastic, dreadful maneuvers, he needs a currency to spend it. In other words, he doesn't want to go back to a bartering system. He doesn't want to start trading flour for gold or flour for wheat. He needs a currency system. So if a man made $500 billion or $700 million or $300 million or $2.5 billion manipulating markets, busting out companies, sucking out their assets, doesn't he need a currency to spend it with? And so therefore, the very same gangsters who busted out Wall Street are very careful not to short out the dollar and then bust out the entire structure of the economy because they'll be left with paper. Capitalism is not supposed to be piracy. Capitalism must be regulated or else you will have piracy, which is what we have now. George Bush deregulated the entire nation, particularly Wall Street. As a result, we've had this collapse. Make no mistake about it. After the collapse of 1929. Regulations were put in to stop wild, insane speculation. You could not buy on margin anymore to the extent that it caused 1929. I learned that in high school. But you don't learn anything in high school except Johnny has two daddies. And then you take a drug since you're a year old. Then you take another at 15. Then you smoke dope and you don't know what's going on around you. Then you watch pornography. You're a slave. You're living like a slave. And if I have to be the only one here telling you what's going on, from my point of view, the best I can, then I will do so. Deregulation did this. Rampant, insane deregulation did this.
Huge investment banks are going under because of their own bad practices, and then they're asking the public to bail them out. Federal agencies are failing to defend you, are failing to defend the public interests. And reckless CEOs are walking off with multi-million dollar severance deals, money taken from what's left of some of these companies that they were supposed to be serving. It's going to take a man of action and a proven reformer to clean up Wall Street, and that man is Senator John McCain.
The government has an obligation to investigate, and if there is chicanery discovered, which there will be, that's assuming we can get anyone who could investigate who is independent, their assets should be seized. Never mind, they're going to fire them. They got properties worth hundreds of millions of dollars or more. Take their values.
Savage.
A couple of years back, I had an air conditioning system put into my house by a legitimate air conditioning firm. But I didn't know who he was using for labor. Well, today I had an American air conditioning man go in, a guy I know, to look at adding something for me. He said, do you know that your panel is burned out from what this guy put in? You could have burnt your house down. That's what we're talking about here, Mark. I had no idea he used a substandard electrician. I thought he used a union electrician. I had no way of checking.
But that's what they're using. They're using nothing but illegals.
Right. He got some guy who learned it in a trade school in Guadalajara, if that, or picked it up along the way. He didn't tell me that. He used somebody, some illegal alien, probably relative, and passed on the money he saved into his own pocket. I didn't ask him to use a cheap electrician when he put the air conditioning in. So this is what we're talking about. Thanks. See, I'm a lucky guy because I come from a blue-collar background. Otherwise, I don't know what I'd be. It's very good to have your feet on the ground and know what reality is. And I don't know how a person who grew up in living off the fat of the land where everything is handed to them can know really what's going on down on the street level. I guess that's what I'm very lucky in a way that my father was so mean to me. To me, mean. I mean, I didn't want to do what he made me do. To me, it seemed mean. But he was right in a way. We fought like crazy. But I'll never forget to this day the day he dragged me out of that house and said, that's it. I'm never the fight. It's going to be in my book, by the way, my autobiography. The reason I'm living through all of this again is because I'm reviewing all the stories over the years that I've told, and I had them printed up, and I'm editing them. And I found the one where I was a kid sitting at home every night. I was talking about watching Walter Cronkite on the news at night. And I'm eating a steak, I'm eating French fries, and I'm eating cherry vanilla ice cream every night like a fat little porker. And my father comes in 6 o'clock gray from the day's struggle over the Queensboro, over the bridge and the tunnel. And God knows if business was no good, he's white from the day and from the commute. And here's his fat number one son sitting there with being fed like King Farouk, the steak, the fries, the cherry vanilla ice cream. In other words, a heart attack diet. And he turns gray as a ghost seeing that I'm – so he says to my mother one day, I must have been 12, that's it. You're ruining the kid. This is over. He's coming into the market with me every Saturday from now on. No, I don't care what you want. You're coming in. So I went from this spoiled little world down into a Dickensian basement in his store where I had to work like a Bowery bum cleaning the bronze statues with the cyanide solution. I've told the story before. I don't want to tell it again. It'll be in my autobiography. But the point I'm making is I resented it. But in a way, I mean, I learned an awful lot about hard labor, horrible labor, disgusting work, and I was able to do it. And to this day, I got to tell you something. Once you're trained to work, once you're committed to being a worker, you can't stop. There's no retirement. Because once you – what do I mean retirement? I don't even know what the word means. I'm an inner-city kid. I'm not proud of it. I'm not unproud of it. I never really learned to play tennis. I never learned to play golf. I know friends who grew up in the same milieu I did who early on took up tennis and golf, and I, that's what they want, fine. I never found it interesting. I found the games too slow. It's like watching paint dry to me to play tennis or golf. And I know it requires skill. Don't get me wrong. I'm not just blowing it off. It takes tremendous skill, but boring, I can't believe it. I'd rather roll on the rug and play with my dog and stick my fingers in his mouth and pull on his canine teeth than play golf. But if you like it, God bless you. And it's a tough game to do right. The point is a little different. When I went to college, skiing just became big in America. I remember, and some of the guys I grew up with took up skiing and they went to Mount Snow in Vermont. I got the ski pants, but I never took up skiing. I liked the outfit. I thought that they would attract girls, so I got ski pants. And they worked. I got to tell you the truth. In those days, it was before I could afford to eat a lot, so consequently, the ski pants had their benefits. But I never took up skiing. I learned how to use a sled, and it was fun to go down hills in the Bronx on a sled. I almost got killed under a truck. To this day, I can remember the truck. Remember the days? Could you imagine? I grew up in a time when trucks had chain drives on them. Monster trucks that had chain drives going around the wheels. So a kid's uncle, but we put three of us on a sled. The uncle must have been 20. To me, he was an old man. All three of us bellied up on a sled, American Flyer, I think, whatever. Who knows what it was. And was shooting down a hill, and he lost control of the sled. I swear to God, it went under the truck as it was moving. I thought we were going to be crushed and shot out on the other side of the truck. It shows you what kids go through. They can die by accident for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Since I've had my espresso, and since I'm not going to sleep tonight anyway because I'm sacrificing tonight's sleep for today's show, as I did last night. I've been up, I think, for about 36 hours. No, I slept, but I didn't sleep. It was like a tossed, horrible, you know, the nightmares were daymares in the middle of the night. But there was nowhere to go in there. The problem is I have nothing to do in the middle of the night. What do you do in the middle of the night when you can't sleep? I have answers to that, too, because there was a period in my life that I was totally insomniac, and I thought I would die from a lack of sleep. And then I read a lot of books on insomnia, and I found out that insomnia can be your best friend. What it means is you don't really need to sleep. You're not tired. Most of us sleep when we don't even have to, incidentally. This is a myth that you have to sleep. It's like a myth like you have to have three meals a day, or that you have to drink eight glasses of water or three cups of milk a day or whatever. You're not tired, so you're not sleeping. The trick is to not lay in bed. I remember reading one book during this period when I couldn't sleep, and it was mainly money worries. It was money worries because of a lot of reasons, whatever. The kids were young, and I was worried about their future and my future, and what am I going to do? And I killed myself, and they won't hire me because I'm a white male, and they're hiring idiots and morons and putting them into jobs they're not qualified for, and perverts, which, of course, was 100% true. Just take a look at your universities today, putting what they're doing in the universities outside the science departments, which, of course, unfortunately for them, they can't yet populate with their inferior plants because either you understand the periodic table of the elements or you don't. You can't quite do what you do in the social sciences. Nevertheless, I'm up, I'm this and that. So I get a book that says more people have died worrying about a lack of sleep than from a lack of sleep. And I forget who wrote the book. And it was like 10 things you could do. Someone's going to write this down, steal it, and make a book out of it probably. That's okay. I don't really care. Go ahead and do it. And I learned a lot of different techniques. The number one thing was I went out on my deck and looked at the stars. And that's when I started to love stars again after childhood. You see, okay, I'm up. It's dark. The sky is black. The stars are bright. What am I going to do with the time? How about getting out a book that shows me star formations? So there they were. And slowly, you know, and the next one is learn to read, learn to do this, learn to do that. And before long, when you stop worrying about not sleeping, you wind up sleeping again. It's like everything else. You understand that or not? Sure, it's like everything else. You know, there used to be an adage amongst guys that a lot of guys are always hungry for a date for a woman and they couldn't get one. And the guys who did always had the same story to tell, which is that women can tell when you're nervous and you want a woman and they'll avoid you like you have leprosy. That the only guys women want are the ones who don't want them or let's say are aloof and really don't care. It's a terrible reality. It's the same the other way too, by the way. You know, you get desperate, the other party can sense it like an animal. Well, how was it put? We pursue that which retreats. Have you heard that one in the dating world? It's pretty much true in the business world as well. We pursue that which retreats. So the best thing to do is retreat even when you want to pursue in most cases. It's a terrible rule, but it's like hunting and you ask a hunter, there's only one way to hunt, or there's only a particular few ways to hunt, and none of them consist of rushing right at the animals. But that's neither here nor there. So let's go back to the insomnia before I get too far off the track. There are many other things you can do. And, of course, I learned to use passion flower herbal tea. I was very into the whole story there. And that's a great – wait, hold it. There's my story. Let me tell you how I learned to use passion flower herbal tea and how not only did it give me relief from insomnia, but I then learned to carry this tea around with me all over the world in my travels. And it became a great relaxant on airplanes. I didn't have to drink any alcohol. I didn't need the two little bottles of wine that they used to have in those days. Remember those days they served you wine in those two little bottles that you got? The El Cheapo wine bottles that were on airplanes? Now it's bottled wine. Well, anyway, so I heard about a guy, a pharmacist in San Francisco on Ellis Street. He was like an old guy, about 85, 88 at the time. And he was an old timer going way, way back. I don't know what his name was. He was an old Jewish guy named Morris. He was right near the Glide Memorial Church, as a matter of fact, which is a largely African-American church. And I forget the name of the pharmacy. He's since passed on. I go in there because I heard he knew everything about herbal medicine. He was a real pharmacist as opposed to people who were faking it with chlamydia and half mustaches in the health food stores. And I come in and right away I say to him, "Do you have a passion flower herbal tea?" He says to me, "Why, who are you? What do you want?" It was like right out of Brooklyn, and the guy, it was in San Francisco. I said, no, he said, "What, are you an inspector with the FDA? I have nothing. Get out of my store." That's how it started. "I don't have nothing. I have no herbal tea," he says to me. That's all he sold. So I said to him, "Well, I heard you sell herbal tea." "I don't know who you heard from. I have nothing here. I'm a regular drugstore." So I said, "Calm down." I had to show him one of my books. He was afraid I was an inspector, in other words. I think he had been busted by the FDA for selling real products that worked called herbal medicine instead of toxic chemicals that killed and addicted people called pharmaceuticals. So we got to talk, and he said, "What's your problem?" I said, "I can't sleep." He says, "Look, mister," you're still wasting your time. He said, "Go across the street to Joe's Bar and have two shots of scotch and go home. You'll fall asleep. I have nothing for you." Well, eventually he gave me the passion flower herbal tea. I used it. I would brew it every night, and I slept like a baby in the arms of Buddha. This is the Savage Nation.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show. Broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
It is the Savage Nation. Let me tell you the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile who crashed my Jaguar. But first we have to listen to Stan Getz and Charlie Bird. Stan Getz and Charlie Bird on the Savage Nation, Desafinado. To set the mood and the time, oh, I know what you're expecting, but you're not going to get it from me. You'll have to go to one of the other talk show hosts to get. Obama's a Marxist and McCain is a war hero. If that's what you want from now until November, you're in the wrong you're on the wrong dial position. It's over. Leave me alone with it already. I really don't care anymore. I'll talk to you about it after the election. That is, unless there's a revelation here and now. It's enough already. Can we get on with our lives instead of focusing on these narcissistic egomaniacs who want to crash the country into the rocks even further? So please, listen to Desafinado, will you, by Stan Getz and Charlie Bird. And I will tell you the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile who crashed my Jaguar. So as the music fades away, I want to take you back in time to a childhood story. Of course, it's a teenage story at this point. I had a friend whose father was a shady podiatrist, as you can tell by the title of the story. And he had a weird podiatry practice in the back of his apartment in, I think it was Sunnyside, Queens, somewhere in that area. I have no idea what the man did in the back. He was a very strange father. Everybody was afraid of the guy. You'd go, and he was very tall. The father was very tall. He dressed kind of shabbily, but upscale, but it was all tattered. And he always had a weird look on his face. And when the father was not in the apartment, the son, who became the Anglophile later on to cover up his origins, would take you in his father's podiatry studio, clinic, or whatever it was, office. And he'd say with a snicker, "I want you to see my father's rack," where he stretched people or something. And there was always something weird about this guy's podiatry practice. I don't even know what a podiatrist did. Something to do with the feet, but I think this guy did something with another part of the anatomy by implication. Now you speed the clock up. The son who grows up in the shady apartment with a shady father, who was off-beaten, guy didn't become a real doctor, has to, throw dirt on his origins. So he becomes more Brooks Brothers than anybody we know. He adopts an English accent. And the last I heard, he had married a rich girl, this is a long time ago, and became a banker with the umbrella and the whole deal. Now, there's another element to the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile, which is my Jaguar XK150. Prior to the time that he became a pure Anglophile, he was still my friend, but that's before I left New York. And I had an XK150 Jag that I'll never forget. I loved that car more than, most cars. Who remembers what car you love and this and that? But when I say I love that car, you got to remember something. We're limited by our language, English. English has one word for love. I love my car. I love my mother. I love my wife. I love my dog. I love this pizza. I love my new shoes. We're stuck with one verb. In Latin, there are 16 verbs for love, each one slightly more descriptive depending upon the type of love we're talking about. So when I say I love the Jaguar, it's not like I love my dog or any of the other things I mentioned. Well, one night we were partying in the podiatrist son's apartment. The father, I think, was taking advance rack stretching lessons somewhere in the Grenada. And as kids would do, we got drunk and probably some other things were used at the party, who knows what. And he said, "Hey, can I drive your Jag?" It must have been 2 o'clock in the morning. And you're a kid. Yeah, here's the keys. So he takes the car out on Queens Boulevard, 2 o'clock in the morning in Queens. And, he raced it out as fast as he could go. And his heart's pounding. He's sitting at a traffic light after, he did this long run. The light's red. He stopped. All of a sudden, he looks in this tiny 2-inch mirror that the Jags came with. And he sees a car careening right at the rear of the car. But before he could get the car in first, clutch it, gear it, and get out of there, crash, bang, boom, smashed in. The back of the car is broken off. And, of course, I've reversed the story. I think it was his Jaguar, and I was driving it, and I got hit from the rear. I really don't remember at this point whose car it was, but I do know who hit us. To this day, and I'm not making this up, I know the guy's name. I remember it. He was an Iraqi. I swear to you. It was very odd because I didn't know of Iraqis at that time. But he was an Iraqi national with a pure – his name was not Saddam Hussein. I know that. Nor was it one of the junior Husseins. But it was an Iraqi national who crashed the Jaguar and broke its back. And, of course, that was that. Our friendship ended soon thereafter. Yes, it was his car. He came and saw it. And the back was broken off the car, and he started to almost cry. He didn't cry like a sissy, but he wept. And he said, "You broke the back of my car." I said, "I didn't mean it. I was sitting there." And that's the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile. Now play Desafinado, and I'll tell you why I told you that story. Actually, the song has more meaning to me than the story, because I remember when this song came out, I don't know if I can tell that story. Is that illegal? One of the girls in the crowd had a sister who was a Playboy bunny. She was older. She must have been 22. We were 17, 18, 19. Now, I want to tell you, a Playboy bunny then was a Playboy bunny. Today, it has no meaning. Today, they look like skanks from the lowest levels of the sewer. I mean, you watch that show with that old degenerate bum. I mean, this guy should be Let's just stop right there. I never saw anything like these skanky broads he has in that mansion of his. What is so interesting about these lowlife bimbos he has with him? But in those days, a Playboy bunny was really something. I mean, they were the top of the heap. At least that's how guys saw her. Who knows what they really were? They probably like every other woman on earth. You know, if they had a good figure, they became a Playboy bunny. As long as they did the right producer meet, you know. Well, this song was very popular at that time, you see, and she was 22. And everybody in the crowd wanted to get next to the Playboy bunny. But I was the lucky one that penetrated the ovum. And on the way home from that particular event, which, of course, I was flying high, I couldn't believe it. I was not in the Jaguar. I was in another car. I was in a Chrysler, which had the Hemi engine, but it was not the whatever. It was a Chrysler New Yorker, an old man's car, but it had the Hemi engine. So I'm driving home from that encounter with the Playboy bunny. And remember, I'm really only a kid. And my mind was certainly not in the car. I mean, where was I? I have no idea. My mind was on cloud nine. Bang, hit from the side by a truck. The car is absolutely totaled. I got to get a tow truck. It's towed home to in front of the house. And I remember selling the car for the engine alone to some hitter kid who was going to take the engine out. We had a long talk about it and use it in a dragster.
Savage.
Steve and W on WOR, you're on the Savage. Sorry, Steve. I'm just having too good a time. It's not permissible, but go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm on the West Side Highway, stuck in traffic. I'm tired. So
God, that broken old highway is still there, huh?
It's still there, and it's still broken, I'm afraid to say. But I wanted to call and tell you that I don't want you to go the co-host route. I heard you talking about that about a week or two ago, because I think you're the only guy that gives me the stories that I love hearing. And a couple of pearls of truth that you once said is, hey, this guy's absolutely right. I don't know if you remember, one time a while back, you were talking about never pick a fight with a homeless guy because they'll kill you.
Oh, yes. I learn that the hard way.
You and me both, brother. The second
yes.
one, big guys, big fat guys are often stronger than they think, than you think. You did that one. A guy with a big fat belly one time, I decided to arm wrestle him, and he nearly put me through the floor.
Yes. Yeah, I learned that in the fifth grade. I picked on a fat kid. I almost got killed.
Took me a little longer than that. But then the third one, and this is beautiful, because I've worked in restaurants a lot of my life, and you talked about when you were working at a place in the Catskills, and the chef, the cook in the kitchen, was mixing a big vat of tuna.
Oh, Big Al's tuna. So yeah, tell me about that one.
He said how the cigarette ash went into the tuna fish, and...
You saw it with your own eyes. No, that is an incredibly you couldn't get away with that today. But that's how they made tuna in the kitchens of the Catskill Mountains when I was a wee lad busboy. They took a big vat of tuna. Well, don't get me started. Go on, Steve. I don't mean to interrupt.
Oh, that was the beauty of that is the universality of it, because I've worked in a lot of restaurants, and if people knew exactly what went on in restaurants, they'd never eat in restaurants.
Well, I've heard that over the years, but I've come to trust friends in the business, and they have clean kitchens. By and large, though, you have to be very careful. You do have to be very careful. And I pick the restaurants I eat in, unless you're traveling, and you have no choice. You have to just take the luck of the draw. But the thing to do there is to eat a lot of crushed raw garlic with your food, which will kill a lot of bacteria, and et cetera. There are things you can do as well, Steve. Thanks for the call. I'm not going to tell the story of the tuna fish now. That would be – or should I? No, not now.
Savage.
Denise in Seattle, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael?
Yes.
How are you? Oh, I'm not supposed to ask.
Oh, God. Come on, please, don't ask me how I am. What's your point?
Oh, well, don't get mad at me.
Oh, hey, please, that's number two. One more and you're out. Please, Denise, make your point.
I wanted to know how old your mom was when she came to you in your dream.
Oh, my God. She was younger. She was much younger.
To ask you, because my dad has come to me, and he's just glowing, and he's much younger.
Yeah, I mean, I could be very mundane about it now and knock the whole thing out and get away from the spiritual, and I don't want to do it, because it was a beautiful moment, but I don't know if it's real. Because I think the reason I saw her in my dream is because I found a cube with pictures in it, like was like hidden away, a cube from when she was young, when my kids were young. And I looked at it the other day, and I marveled at how beautiful she was, God bless her soul. So maybe just looking at the picture comes back. Who knows? That's the this is the beautiful thing about being a human being. We don't know any of the answers to this. So you may as well imagine there's a heaven. You may as well imagine that you're punished if you're bad. And he knows when you've been happy. He knows. Ding-a-ling, here's the peppermint. He knows when you've been good or bad. So be good for goodness sake. Hey, Bing Crosby, snowman, mama in the thing, and daddy in the... Everyone's normal. The people were in the closet. The other one, the bad guys were caught. The cops hit him with the clubs and put him away, and there were no bad people. I understand the postcard view of life. It's not the way it is unless you want to live in that world, and you can. Who's to stop you from living in that world? He knows when you've been good or bad, so be good for goodness sake. You know, all right, so you could live in that. Tell your children about Santa Claus if you want. Or if you don't want, then turn your child into a sick gothic who'll get black fingernails and hit someone with a piece of molding.
Savage.
Who can forget one-armed Frank's horrible breath? Or making love by the sewer plant, or me getting dead man's pants, or me eating a diet that would kill, I don't know, anybody. Or how about Tippy the dog being thrown in a garbage truck after he died, or me reading when pasta was spaghetti, or the electric blue saddle stitch pants that were ripped off my legs, or my silent brother. They are all in Psychological Nudity, my new autobiography. Go to michaelsavage.com and order it now to make sure you reserve a copy. Psychological Nudity.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Ed, Chicago, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm a second-time caller. Let me give you a little different spin from a liberal Democrat who's really not enamored with Barack Obama at all, probably from a different perspective than you. In my book, he's not anywhere near liberal enough. For instance, I was looking at Dennis Kucinich and his proposals about ending the war in 90 days. Obama wants 16 months. And what I'm saying about Obama, you can say about Hillary Clinton, too. Okay? We have a problem with the homelessness in this country caused basically by the 1996 Welfare Reform Act. Neither one of them.
Wait, you mean all the bums on in the streets would be better off if we gave them more money?
Well, what would you do? Let them spend the rest of their life sleeping on park benches?
Why not put them in work camps? Most of them are able-bodied.
How much do you plan on paying them in these work camps, sir?
Well, since they're already receiving public assistance, I'd pay them nothing.
Well,
why do you have to pay a man who's right now living off the fat of the land, and he's sucking the fat of the land for a fairly small check, it is true, but he is a leech. He is not a productive member of society. Where is the money supposed to come from?
Wait.
No, I've studied the homeless problem for many years, Ed, because I live in one of the most infested cities in the United States, San Francisco, and I've observed the bums for many years. And the largest portion of them are able-bodied. They're drug addicts or alcoholics. There's no reason they could not be put into work camps and do much of the labor that our illegal aliens are doing. Now, who do you think did this labor in previous generations? It was ne'er-do-wells who today are basically able to live on the fat of the land and drink or use drugs because they're getting a check for nothing. In the old days, they'd pick the crops and they would spend their money on alcohol.
You're going to pay him slave wages. Why not do what Dennis Kucinich said and put him to work for the federal government, fixing up...
Well, because then you're getting into a Soviet-style economy, which I don't happen to think has proven to be very effective.
Mr. Obama, okay. Today he comes to Chicago, all right, and he's talking about the future Olympics, which we don't even know we're going to get. We have a serious problem here in Chicago that it seems like nobody but me is talking about. Hello, I'm right here. Yeah, it was my phone.
Yeah.
We have a problem in Chicago. Right now they're trying to arm our police officers with M4 carbines, which are basically machine guns. They fire 1,000 rounds a minute, 17 rounds a second. We don't need police officers in American cities running around with machine guns.
Wait a minute. Let's stop right here. You mean you need gangs with machine guns and cops with handguns?
Do you know another American city that has armed their entire police force with machine guns? Can you think of one?
Well, wait, why is this proposal even on the table? It's because of the violence in Chicago.
The war on gangs and drugs in big cities is nothing but a bumper sticker slogan. It's like the war on terror. It's an excuse to give these right-wingers all the ammunition they need.
So you say there are no gangs in America?
There are gangs, but they're not running around shooting people, ordinary, everyday working people. They're basically...
Whoa, let's slow down. MS-13, do you know who they are?
We don't have them in Chicago.
Yes, you certainly do. You certainly do. You're making this up. They certainly do exist. Many of them are former military of the El Salvadoran army. They're ruthless murderers. The police are outgunned. I don't want to see any more police get killed. I'd be glad to see the cops have machine guns. Secondly, there's a secondary benefit to the cops having machine guns, which is when we do have this terrorist event, they'll be fully armed and prepared to take care of business with our dear friends from the Middle East who are sitting here waiting to attack us.
What about the ordinary law-abiding citizen? You know, in Chicago, we can't even legally possess a pistol. Do you think that's fair, sir?
No, but wait a minute. You see, you're mixing two things together. Would you like to possess a pistol?
We cannot own a pistol in Chicago, correct.
No, but Ed, we're having a reasonable conversation, even though we're both going to walk away disagreeing with each other. Would you like to be able to own a pistol?
Absolutely.
So if you would like to own a pistol, why is that you'd like to own a pistol? What do you need it for?
Property in my life.
Thank you. So you and I agree on the Second Amendment. I totally agree with you on that issue. It's one of the great benefits of being an American. One of the first things that Fidel Castro did was disarm all of the Cubans so we could turn them into slaves. The same thing Hitler did in his one of his first acts was take away the right to bear arms in Germany. We understand all of this, Ed. So if you're a libertarian or a liberal, whatever, but you still understand you have the right to protect your home and property, I mean your home and life, you need a gun to do that. You can't do it with persuasion.
And that's the whole issue, Dr. Savage. While they want to arm the police to the teeth, they want to disarm the law-abiding citizens. This has been going on in Chicago for a quarter of a century, sir.
So would you say you'd like the right to bear arms extended to yourself at the same time the police are up-armed with machine guns?
I want to have the same right to defend myself against the police as the criminals because they can become criminals. Sir?
Well, I'm not saying that all police are angels. Don't get me wrong. But if I were being mugged, I would call 911, not the ACLU.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Looking at what I see has happened now, a financial 9/11. I'm also saying that Bush came in shortly thereafter. There was a 9/11. We were attacked physically by terrorists on Wall Street and in Washington, D.C., the Pentagon. And it looks like as he leaves, he's giving us a financial meltdown. Now you say, why is Bush responsible? I'll get to that. But make no mistake about it, he's the president of the United States of America. George Bush permitted this to happen by deregulating Wall Street and letting the pirates go crazy. I think it was Karl Marx who said, if you give capitalists enough rope, eventually they will hang themselves by their own petard. Bush broke all regulatory policy, and as a result, we have this financial 9/11. You know, every time there's an accident in the world, whether it's a train crash or a plane crash, they usually look at pilot error. If it's not George Bush, who is it? Well, then it must be the head secretary of the Treasury. Henry Paulson, who caused or allowed this financial 9/11 to happen, in my opinion. Why do I say that? There's a lead article from England, and only from England, in a Times UK that says the last men standing, Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. Last men standing. Are you aware of the fact that our Treasury Secretary was former CEO of Goldman Sachs? How many months have I been warning you by what I've seen going on in this country? How many months have I said to you, this is a country of Goldman Sachs, by Goldman Sachs, and for Goldman Sachs? And you thought I was kidding. Well, I'm as kidding as much as Jonathan Swift was kidding in Gulliver's Travels. This is a country of Goldman Sachs, by Goldman Sachs, and for Goldman Sachs. The first headline says Dow falls 500 points in worst day since 2001. That is why I'm also saying Bush came in on a 9/11 and is going out on a 9/15. But I'm reluctant to say that because he's not finished yet. 3 months ago, I said to you that George Bush has not yet done all the damage he's going to do to this country. And guess what? He's got 3 big months left. The next article says Lehman CEO hubris contributed to the meltdown. That's correct. You got to understand something. There are men involved in this meltdown. Many of you don't understand that what has just happened is worse than what happened in 1929. Why do I say such a rash thing? It's worse than what happened in 1929. Well, if you don't believe me, then why don't you listen to the opening speech that we played by Alan Greenspan, who said the U.S. is in a once-in-a-century financial crisis. So if we're in a once-in-a-century financial crisis, meaning greater than anything that's happened in the last 100 years, well, that takes us back to 1908. So it's greater than 1929. So if it's greater than 1929, why are we not hearing about it? So that leads me to another couple of questions here on the Savage Nation. And again, I've turned every channel on. I was watching CNBC since 4 o'clock in the morning, and they do a stupendous job. But there's one problem with CNBC. They will not name names. It's all a cozy old girls club. They will not call for an investigation because they know if they do, they would wind up losing their access to leaders on Wall Street. But make no mistake about it, it is the leaders of Wall Street, at least some of them, who must immediately be arrested and indicted and investigated. They must be. Why is nobody else in America but Michael Savage demanding a governmental investigation of what has happened on Wall Street? The question to you is, who should be indicted and tried for this debacle? Do you agree with Bush that you should be satisfied with Paulson and Bernanke? Now I'm going to remind you of something else. After Osama bin Laden attacked us on 9/11/2001, he said he did so because he attempted to destroy our economy. So he hit Wall Street. He wanted to hit our economy. What Osama bin Laden dreamed of doing in 2001 has now been done in 2008 by homegrown terrorists. But they didn't do it to destroy this country. Make no mistake about it. The greedy pirates of Wall Street did it strictly for serve their own purposes. The pirates of Wall Street who did this to this country, and make no mistake about it, you're not going to know the full ramifications for a long while. The pirates of Wall Street who did this to us have done more damage than Osama bin Laden did to our financial systems. Who did it? Why no calls for an investigation on any channel? What must we the people do to take our country back from these thieves? Why were limits on speculation withdrawn by George Bush in 2004? It was allowed, they were allowed to speculate at a number of 15 to 1 in certain financial instruments. Bush broke that off and said, now go to anything you want. They went to 70 to 1, the gangsters. Who benefited from this? Why no answers on why Paulson is not forced to step aside because of appearances of conflicts of interest? Let me repeat that again. I am not accusing Henry Paulson of a conflict of interest, but I will ask this question. If the Secretary of the Treasury is the former CEO of the last man standing on Wall Street, Goldman Sachs, do you not think that presents itself as a conflict of interest? Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley face questions, says the article. As the only two independent Wall Street brokerages standing, Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley will face a barrage of questions at their third quarter announcements this week. Some experts believe that in a climate of panic, in which clients, trading partners, and lenders are becoming increasingly wary of brokerages, it is only a matter of time before the two groups melt down or are snapped up. That's very interesting. Meltdown or snapped up. Well, I can't address what Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley are going to do, but I do know this. After Bear Stearns was broken up and destroyed by the Pirates of Wall Street, and make no mistake about it, experts said that Bear Stearns was destroyed by Wall Street with a little help from their friends in government. After that happened, there were calls and grumblings about Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, but that's been brushed aside. What about Chris Cox, the great genius of the Republican machine? Chris Cox, who was put in as the head of the SEC, why is he invisible? If you put a sheriff in charge of a town, a lawless town like Dodge City, and you bring in Wyatt Earp, and Dodge City continues to shoot, and there's shooting and killing in Dodge City, what you do is you fire Wyatt Earp. Well, Chris Cox was the Wyatt Earp brought in to control the pistoleros of Wall Street. Instead, Chris Cox has gone and hid inside a bedroom somewhere, upstairs in a saloon, to continue the Western theme. I'll take your calls because I cannot believe that from 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock this morning, I have turned on show after show after show, radio show, TV show, and I hear morons talking about baseball games yesterday. I hear idiots in talk radio who should get up the next day and say I quit because I'm too stupid to cover what's going on in the world. I apologize for wasting the people's time. They should get up and say I apologize for wasting gullible, foolish people's time by talking about utter rubbish. There is no other story. Bush brought in 9/11 in the sense that he, when he entered politics, we had 9/11 shortly thereafter. And now, as he's going out the door, we have 9/15. So today's show is called From 9/11 to 9/15, A Financial 9/11. It's a whodunit. It's a mystery story. So again, America, America, savage America, wake up, because this didn't happen by accident.
Savage.
Who can forget one-armed Frank's horrible breath while making love by the sewer plant? Or me getting dead man's pants, or me eating a diet that would kill, I don't know, anybody. Or how about Tippy the dog being thrown in a garbage truck after he died, or me reading when pasta was spaghetti, or the electric blue saddle-stitched pants that were ripped off my legs, or my silent brother. They are all in Psychological Nudity, my new autobiography. Go to michaelsavage.com and order it now to make sure you reserve a copy. Psychological Nudity.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Let us go to the callers then. KPRC in Houston, Texas. Peter, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi, Doctor. Friends and I having a discussion. I'd like to hear your opinion about it. It's Shakespeare. I know you're a lover of language. Opinion would mean a lot. Shakespeare, thine own self be true. A lot of people take that to mean that don't fool yourself. And a couple of us are also on the other side saying that actually what it means is that sometimes your own counsel and your own opinion is your best opinion. To thine own self, we'd like to hear your opinion.
To thine own self be true. Well, you're asking me what I think it means?
Yes.
I think it's pretty self-evident what that means, which is no matter what people are saying to you, if you know that it's not right for you or not the truth, to thine own self be true. Listen to your own self. Now, does that mean, see, here's an interesting thing. An ultra-liberal would take that to mean it's licensed to do anything you want. But the question is, what is your true self? You can analyze that, meaning to thine own self. What is your own self? When I was younger, trying to understand what self was, I saw a series of boxes within boxes within boxes. Where is the self? Keep peeling away the onion skin, and what do you find at the center? And at a certain point, if you're an atheist, you find nothing at the center, and you get very frightened. It's only by finding God or refinding God, because God originally is in all of us, that you find where yourself lies. And once you find God, there are a set of rules, and then you have a self, and then you have a self to be true to. But without a core, without a self, you can lead to total anarchy. You can wind up doing anything with that so-called concept of self. I don't know if this is an answer, Peter. It was a little roundabout. Does it help in any way?
Absolutely.
Thank you. I know the phone's breaking up. That was not a bad soliloquy I just gave. I think the old bard would be proud of me. But remember what I just said. I think that should be captured. That's a very nice philosophical starting point for you to understand what that means, to thine own self be true. Does that mean follow any impulse you have? Why, that can't be what to thine own self be true means. You have an impulse to set a cat on fire. Is that yourself? Or is that some demonic impulse you have? Is that some out-of-control, repressed impulse? And what you'll wind up with is, you know, what they're doing in Menclaw, you know, having sex with a horse. Is that your own self? Or is that an evil impulse that was in somehow instilled into a person through a series of degradations of the soul? And first the loss of God, and then the soul implodes worse than Chernobyl. And into that vacuum enters the devil, if you want to put it in medieval theological terms. You want to put it in current psychological terms, you need to have a core self in order to be true to it. What is that core self? Where does it come from? How do you build a self? Isn't education about building a child's self? Think about this for a minute. I don't want to get into this too much, but I'll do it for another minute. When you have a child, you really don't know much about life, as much as about life as you should know till you raise a child. I got to tell you that right now. As intelligent, as kind, as brilliant as you might be, until you have seen a child born of your own, and until you have raised that child through thick and through thin, from dirty diapers to the diploma and beyond, day in and day out, worrying about their safety and their sanity, you don't really have a full understanding of what it is to be a full human. That's how I see it. And that's the way nature intended it to be. That doesn't mean there aren't brilliant, wonderful people who don't have children. Don't get me wrong. But there is another layer of difference between that and being a parent and sticking with the child. Anyone can be a parent. A dog can be a parent. Many, many men today are like dogs. They think because they impregnated a woman, they're a father. That doesn't make you a father, impregnating a woman. You know better than a dog. A father sticks with the child even if he doesn't want to. That's a father. That's a husband. That's the meaning of a husband. Anybody can run away and find another person to engage in that activity with. But a father sticks around. But anyway, I don't want to go there. So now, how do you raise a child? What are you trying to do with a child? You're trying to teach him right from wrong? Of course you are. So where do you begin? You let him watch pornography? You let him smoke a joint? Well, of course not. Even a liberal would say, I'm not going to let my child smoke a joint when he's young. I'm not going to let a child watch pornography. Why? Because those are evil influences. What are they going to do to him? They're going to lead him astray. They're going to poison his mind. They're going to weaken his neurological system. So you feed him the good food. You give him the right water. And also, you got to give him the right education. And that means watch out what influences your child. Now you find out that a liberal who has a child who reaches a certain age becomes somewhat less liberal and somewhat more conservative. The old joke was, what do you call a liberal with two children? The answer is a Republican. Or you want to go a step further, what do you call a liberal with four children? I can even answer that one. Well, the old one was, you know, there's many different ways to put it. But until you have a child that you're raising, you don't really know the difference between liberalism and conservatism. It all comes down to the next generation and living for the next generation. See, that's the ultimate reason for living, is not for yourself. It's for the next generation. It's to give life. It's like the farmer sacrifices to raise the crop. He sacrifices by getting up in the morning. He sacrifices by working in the cold and working in the rain and working even in the winter. And then he sees the product of his labor in the form of the fruit, or in the form of the wheat, which is, of course, the fruit of the grass. That's the product of his labor. He lived for his child, the crop. And that's the purpose of a human being's life. Now, of course, you can say, well, writing or painting or sculpting or creating is also a product of a life, and it is. But they're not mutually exclusive. You can raise children and write a book. You can raise children and do a radio show. You can do numerous things to raise children. But until you've had the fulfillment of seeing a child raised up, I don't think you really understand what it's all about, nor can you really understand why it's so important to support family values. If you don't have a family and you don't have children, what do you know about family values? Nothing. Nothing. All you can do is sneer at them and party on. Well, good for you. But that's not the reason to live, and that's not the way a society survives or goes forward. That's all. So what does to thine own self be true mean? It means many things, but it certainly doesn't mean following every impulse that may enter your psyche or attempt to control you or move you in a certain direction. It means the opposite of that.
To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Now we got the email chain is on my email already with the family. We're talking vacation. 500 emails. Where to go, where not to go. I want to go, I don't want to go. I can't go then, I will go then, I won't go then. So now it's down to this already. It's a ship again. I swore I'd never go on a ship again, except my own ship, because every ship I've been on, I got either food poisoning or try to get a helicopter to remove me after 48 hours. The last ship I was on, I begged the owner. I said, "You got to cable the owner and tell him I'll pay for a helicopter to get me off the dreadful nightmare." I called it what did I call it at the time? I said it was a trailer park with propellers. I never saw anything like this. What was the name of that cruise line? They got me the owner's cabin. You hear this? Did you hear this story years ago? I went on this ship. It was like a 2-dayer. After 12 hours, I was begging him to take me off by helicopter. They put me in the owner's cabin as far forward as you can get from the tattooed people jumping in the swimming pool, beating up their girlfriends, that kind of thing. And I'm in the owner's cabin, and above me, this is a God's honest truth, they put me beneath a running track. Now, I'm noise sensitive. Why am I on a ship to rest or to listen to a moron running at 5 in the morning? Thump, 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 thump over my head 5 in the morning. The runners were running over the owner's cabin at 5 in the morning, so I couldn't sleep. Now you couldn't go to sleep because the owner's cabin was right in front of the swimming pool where I never saw anything like these creatures were jumping in the pool, dueling rollerballs and drunk and rumming. I never saw anything like this nightmare. So that was the last cruise. I don't think I'm going to do this. No. It starts out, yeah, we'll go, it'll be great. What am I going to do if I go in and I get a great cabin and the guy below me smokes a cigar? Why would he smoke a cigar? Because the moron's on a ship and he thinks he should smoke a cigar because he thinks he's rich. Because he bought a cabin for $1,299 instead of one for $699, so he thinks he's rich. And his wife made him rent a tuxedo, and she's not exactly wearing Nan Kemper's gowns. She's not exactly wearing haute couture. She's wearing low couture. And you got to see these creatures in the dining room. No, please. Why am I even thinking of this? I say to myself, that's it. It's over. I'm not going. I'm going to send that email the minute I get off the air. But I was thinking about, like, we have a new thing now. You know, the trend is bloggers, you know, and like every politician wants to go to bloggers. Why are they going to bloggers? How many people can read a blogger? What is a blogger? It's a guy sitting in a room writing a column on the internet. So let's say you have 10,000 readers of your blog. That's insignificant. When you consider that, in essence, a talk radio host is a verbal blogger, by the way, you want to put it in that context. But our audience is much larger. Moreover, we can use our voice and our emotion and sound effects and music to make our point, right? Different tones could create different feelings in the listener. But, you know, when you actually analyze what a blog is, you can go all the way back and you realize that the first blog were the Ten Commandments. You think about it. The guy walking around amongst the ancient Israelites, and he says, well, I was walking around on a mountain, and some guy up in the sky talked to me, and he says, here's what he said to me. I wrote it down for you. Look, get out of here. I'm going to the cafe Golden Idol. You know what I mean, Moses? You want to talk about some guy up there? Go ahead. Leave me alone. I'm going to Cafe Golden Idol. I'm going to have a drink. Okay, Moses? You want to come along? Come along. Otherwise, you know, leave the tablets at home. You know what I mean? Leave me alone. But that the first blog, when you think about it, were the Ten Commandments. It was a blog. And in the beginning, no one believed them. Guys are marching around. The only reason it's Ten Commandments, when in fact the Orthodox Jews know that there's 330 some odd commandments, is because they can only carry around two big tablets. If you can put the first 10 on, here's the 10, all right? You believe these, we got another 10. You believe those, we got another 300 for you. But who can carry around, you know, like, who can carry around 30 tablets? So Moses had one tablet at each army. We got 10 commandments here. Here's my blog. Thou shalt this, thou shalt that's God's. I'm not mocking God. I'm telling you that originally, think about it. If you actually analyze it like I do with psychological nudity, and I'm not afraid to take on a subject, whether it be the Dubai port steal or the Ten Commandments, analyze it. I mean, the analysis will lead you to the proper conclusion that the original blogger was Moses. He walked around. They thought he was nuts. Guy in the sky. Yeah, all right. Hey, maybe you need a dream. You know, you've been working a little too hard up there in that mountain with the sheep. You got this whack job idea. Someone up there wrote this down to you. What are you, crazy? I can't do any of the things I like to do. What are you, crazy? Everything I like to do is on that tablet saying it's not good. How could everything I do be bad? It's impossible, Moses. How could everything I like be wrong? Why should I be punished for everything I like to do, Moses? And so so in other words, in the beginning, his blog wasn't very popular. And it was the same with the Christians who tried to sell it to the Romans. They were, in essence, bloggers. And they said, well, listen to this. Throw them to the lions, man. We like sleeping with animals. We like, you know, running around with anything we want. There's no such thing as morality. We don't even know what it is. We're Romans, after all. So they threw them to the lions because they didn't want to hear the truth. And that's God's word. And the same thing now. The liberal barbarians are trying to throw the Christians to the lions in the same manner. They're saying, well, what your truth is not our truth. We like to sleep with who we want to sleep anytime we want. There's no morality. We could do it within a road. We could do it with children. Doesn't matter. Animals, doesn't matter. Whatever you want. So we're descending, in essence, back to the ancient Romans. And before long, we'll be back to the animal altogether. Do you like that little? That's not bad. That was like the original blog from there to now. Boom. History all in about 2 minutes. Created it for you on the spot. Now, I'm sure I made as many people unhappy as happy. Because stretching people's imaginations is a very dangerous thing. In a world where there is increasingly less and less imagination and less tolerance because of the increasing number of pompous fools called liberals who think they know everything, when in fact I know everything. Lawrence, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
How you doing, Mike? I was listening to you about the cruise that you obviously have gone on a number of times. It sounds like a traditional cruise, which is you have to be in the same place every night for your dinner. And you should try the freestyle cruises where there's like 13 restaurants on a ship, no music in the elevators, no music on the promenade deck, and you can do whatever you want.
No, that sounds better. But have they updated the mentality of the ships to that extent?
Absolutely. The new cruise line ships, and I won't mention the name of the cruise line, but the ships are more geared to, you know, an older generation. You find a few children on the ship. And it's great.
Where could I find one with no children on the ship?
Probably.
No, I sound like Scrooge McDuck. I mean, the truth is I raise children. I love children. But why would I want to eat around children?
Exactly. February and March, there aren't any kids or children or even teenagers on the ships.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, the worst month to go on a ship is June. The college idiots are on the ship, drunk all night, puking in the hallways, throwing themselves into swimming pools in the most god-awful time of night, you know, music everywhere. So I got to find something like that where there's no – they can't say no children. They're not allowed anymore.
No, they don't say no children, but if you go a certain time of the year and you find that, like, when the kids are still in school –
Oh, thank God. Yeah, but then sometimes you get the grandparents because the daughter became crazy and had to take the kid away. You know, the daughter went mad. That kind of thing. She shaved her head and ran down Fifth Avenue because she didn't have shoes as good as Nan Kempner. I don't know, you know. Thanks. I'm trying to combine the elements. I remember years ago, when I was on a ship. Oh, God, this was a long time ago. This was like the Royal Viking Sea in the South Pacific, okay? Great cruising days. So there was an old guy. He was from L.A. Hairy chest, you know, like tan. Looked like a garment center guy, very nice guy, like a lifetime, you know, of killing himself, you know, just killing himself at work. So he says, all I do now, he says, I never leave a ship. He says, I'm on the ship all the time. I struck up a conversation. I was like the younger guy, you know, he was the older guy, and he liked me. I liked him. So he said, I cruise the world on a ship. I never get off a ship. He says, I go from one cruise to the other. He said, hey, it's cheaper than, you know, than an apartment. He had probably a big house in L.A., but he liked the ship. And he said, I've already given instructions to the cruise line and the captain that if I die, he's in a heart condition, I'm going to get buried at sea. He said, I don't want anything. That's it. I die. They put me in the freezer. A quick prayer like a chicken in a slaughterhouse, and boom, overboard. That's what he wanted. He figured this guy had it all figured out. You know, he figured he'd party the way he wanted to. Then he'd throw him overboard. You know, I don't know if I burial at sea. I'm not too sure about that one. That's hard to do because that, you know, the crabs that you don't even hit a crab if it's a, you don't even get that far. They throw you overboard. You're not hitting a crab for like 8,000 feet. You're being picked apart before your bones. Nice thought. Let's not go there. No skeletons. No skeletons tonight. Yeah, it's a quick dance in the sun. It's after many a summer dies the swan. There's no question about it. We're all in denial. We're denying the main question. We won't deal with the main question. It's theological as much as it is philosophical. But the fact is that we're all afraid of dying. And the more we're afraid, the more we party till all hours of the night. You know, para vivir, dancing. Oh, I was up all night partying. Oh, great time, great sex, great guy, great sex, great guy. Party on, party. But they're all afraid. They're running from death. And because they're running from death, because they won't face God, they're going to run even further from death until eventually they get exhausted. And there's only one thing left at that point, which is God. They'll come down to it. That's what it comes down to for everybody at the end of the day. So you're lucky if you're born with a high consciousness when you're very young and you face these questions of death when you're young. Because if you face it when you're young and you go through despair when you're young, when you get older, it really doesn't bother you that much. You realize there's nothing you can do about it anyway. So try to live the best life you can. Don't hurt too many people. Don't let them hurt you by all means. But, you know, it's all about walking through that thing called life, which is a gigantic show. It's all a show. It's like a gigantic arcade. Life is a great arcade. You understand that? And on the left side, there are all sorts of exhibits down this one. This was told to me by a holy man about 25 years ago, and I went through this whole thing. So he said, you're walking down an arcade, and on the left side, there are exhibits. On the right side, there are exhibits, and there's little, you know, booths, and they're trying to pull you in. And there's a naked lady here, there's a naked man there, and there's a gambler here, and there's a drug guy selling drugs there, and there's a movie here. And your job is to keep walking down the straight and narrow and not be pulled into any one of those booths. You can look at them. You can understand it's there. You don't deny that they're there, but you don't get sucked into any one of those booths. You got to make that passage. It's a passage, you know, down life. I mean, that's it. Of course, you know, you're going to be attracted to the Cafe Golden Calf. I understand that. But you just don't get stuck in the Cafe Golden Path, and you don't drink to the point where you fall off the stool. You see, it's all this balance, the middle way. But youngsters can't do that unless you put them on Ritalin. Then they become instant heartless people without a soul. You get it? No? We move on.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
You know, I realize the beauty of radio. Here's the beauty of radio. Here is why it's the entertainer's dream. This is the greatest medium for a great entertainer who is shy. Now, listen to what I just said to you. No one's ever said this in the history of entertainment, ever. This is brand new stuff. I've gone down into a whole new realm of reality here. I have an entertainer's personality. I have since I'm a child. I controlled it. I worked with it. Highly educated, blah, blah, blah. But fundamentally, I've always enjoyed entertaining people for many different reasons, and I won't go into it right now. However, live performances are extremely demanding. And you ask anyone who does them what it takes out of people. They come off drained, and it really wrecks them in some ways. Yeah, you get the energy of the crowd. But getting up in front of people is really amazing. So now, listen to where I'm going. Let's say the numbers say that I have 8 to 10 million listeners a week. It's probably closer to 20 million on and off. But let's take the actual numbers of 8 to 10 million. That means that any 15-minute spread, there's 800,000 people listening to the show somewhere on the 300 or so stations that this radio show, The Savage Nation, has heard. 800,000 or so people every 15 minutes come in and out of the tent, so to speak. Now, can you imagine getting up in front of an audience of 800,000 people and trying to perform as naturally as I do? It's impossible. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's the beauty of electronic performance, whether it be... it has to be radio. Because television actually gives you that feeling of the millions, the tens of millions of people, which is why so many of them are so homogenized, pasteurized, sanitized, pressurized, etc. And it's why many of us don't listen to the news anymore, because we know they're doing it because they've been homogenized. Rather, they're doing a homogenized newscast that offends as few people as possible. Consequently, it's not worth listening to. Why listen to something that isn't truthful? Radio, on the other hand, is an intimate medium because the broadcaster, the performer in this case, is fundamentally in his own mind, in his own world, in his own room, in his own studio. So he doesn't even understand who he is reaching. He has no concept that he's talking to millions of people. He actually thinks he's talking to a couple of people, a small audience. Therefore, it's like an intimate performance inside a small nightclub. At its best, that's what radio ought to be. And that's what I do, is I project into a small audience in a small nightclub, which is why it seems so personal to you. Do you understand the difference between this show and some others? And I'm not knocking other shows directly, just indirectly.
Savage.
Who could focus on this every day without getting mentally deranged? And how can you focus on this every day and pretend that you can do anything about it? It's like a world spinning out of control and there's no way to stop it. It seems like it has to crash in order to recover its sanity, because I've never seen anything like it. Never. I never saw anything like it. It doesn't make sense to me anymore. You got our worst enemy in history since Hitler, who tells us he's going to get a nuclear bomb, wipe out Israel. Israel does nothing. Then after he's through with that, he's going to wipe out the great Satan. We do nothing. Then he comes to New York and he basically defecates on our nation and our president, and he walks out of here untouched. Now, I mean, what am I supposed to do as a normal guy? I'm no government. What's it for? What's it for? So a kid could go in the Marines thinking he's going to save the country, and if God forbid he shoots them first, he gets a court-martial? And then Bush gives a medal to a dead Navy SEAL? Sure, a dead SEAL is a good SEAL, I guess. That's the next best step to a court-martial. There you go. WTNT, Rafat, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. First, I just want to say thank you for standing up for what's right. At least one person out there is doing that. The second thing I want to talk about is, I mean, yeah, we talk about illegal aliens and all that, but we tend to forget the garbage that comes in here legally. Like, I just moved to D.C., and all these Muslim fundamentalists, I mean, they walk around Northern Virginia as if they own the place.
All right. Well, they do own the place. They spit on Americans. They look at you with hatred if you're not wearing 14th to 15th century garb, and they spit on the ground. Now, the question is why Bush is bringing in so many of them. Isn't that the question?
Absolutely.
You'll have to ask the genius himself. Why would a nation that is as evolved as America and as liberal as America is socially want to bring in throwbacks who are living in the 15th century? Now, you have to ask yourself, what's the benefit? What is the societal benefit of bringing in throwbacks, some of whom are no doubt terrorists and some of whom are going to produce children who will become terrorists? Why would you want to bring them into the country? Isn't that common sense? A commonsensical question? Well, go ask George Bush. He may have an answer for it.
I
don't have an answer. Don't you understand? I'm going to give you the shrug now. The shoulders go up. I go, what do I know? How do I have an answer for George Bush's genius? I know that many Republicans think he has a plan for everything. And in the end, he's going to show the genius that he really is. Thanks. We need more Muslims. I think we should have more throwbacks brought in with burqas and things of that nature who refuse to adapt to America or do as Americans do. We need more of them in every community. As many as we can get, particularly young, disenfranchised males. That's what we really need right now. I don't think I should watch late-night television, particularly shows about where they dig up bones from the Mount Vesuvius. I mean, the dead Italians I got to look at, that they got wiped out in 1/24th of a second. He or she is clutching an infant. We can tell by mutilating, desecrating her bones through new techniques that she was a slave girl because her bones were thicker than the Romans, than the Italians found in the tomb. She was clutching probably the baby of the owner if it was her own. Over here we have the lovers in their arms. They did not know what hit them. They were hit by the dust, the hot dust of the volcano in 1/24th of a second. Is it any wonder I talk to my dog at night? You know, at a certain point, you become speechless. You have to talk to an animal. My dog doesn't even bark, and I know what he wants. How do I know that? Why do I have such sensitivity? He looks at me, and I know what he wants. Looks at me one way, I know he wants water. Looks at me another way, I know he wants to go out and make. He looks at me another way, I know he wants to go to bed. He looks at me another way, I know he wants to jump off the bed. And he knows I'm a verbal guy. He listens to me on the radio. You know, he sees me working in front of a microphone. You'd think he'd be more verbal, but no, he can give me a look that petty.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
So we're watching the implosion of financial institutions unlike any in your lifetime. Many of you do remember your parents, perhaps, or maybe by now it's your grandparents talking about the Great Depression of 1929. I don't know, and I have no way of gauging whether it's that bad. I don't know whether it's that bad or it's worse. I don't know how this is going to play out. I have fears as to how it could play out, but I have no real knowledge because there's probably only three or four people in the world who know how they want to play out this monopoly game. We have no control over it. There are three or four people who did this to this country, and there are three or four people who have sustained the currency for the very same reasons. They robbed this money by busting out companies. Where are they going to spend the money? If they bust out all the financial systems and kill the currencies, the money will become worthless itself. Say, well, okay, they could put it into Deutschmarks, they could put it into euros, or they could put it into other currencies. But if the U.S. dollar, if God forbid, got melted, the other currencies would also go under. And so therefore, the pirates who've done this to Wall Street, and what's intriguing to me is that 6 months ago, you had five major investment banks that have been around a very long time. Five. Now there's two. One of which has produced three Treasury secretaries in a row for the United States of America. That's why I have not jokingly said, watch out, America. Watch out, America. Watch out, America. Like Lynkeus, the pilot seer of the Argonauts, I've been warning you that you cannot take a man from a major Wall Street firm and put him into the Treasury Department, take away all regulations and expect him not to behave the way he behaved in order to become the CEO of a major investment bank. Don't you understand it's in the nature of people? It's the scorpion and the frog. If you put a scorpion in charge of something, the scorpion's going to sting. It doesn't matter whether they're good or bad. It's irrelevant. It's their behavioral pattern. It doesn't alter. No calls for an investigation? No screaming in the streets? We want the heads of those who did it to us, who wiped us out, took out our pension funds? It's unheard of. Why is America not saying a word? Why are you silent? I will give you the answer. Because you are either drugged up, or you live on pornography or entertainment or sports, and consequently you become nothing but an easily manipulated sheeple. America is filled with a drug pornography crazed nation of people, stupefied by celebrities who are worthless vermin. Sluts that belong in an insane asylum for nymphomaniacs are held up every day by the media moguls to throw skirts in your face. They blow their images in your face every day, so that's all you talk about, or some idiot sports. I hit one all-news channel here in San Francisco. They were talking about a sporting event yesterday. I had a talk show with two goofballs laughing about something that they saw over the weekend, a TV show, two Heckle and Jekyll types, talking about it as though suddenly it's 1982 and then everyone wants to listen to their childish Beavis and Butthead humor. No mention of 9/11, no mention of 9/15, no mention of a financial 9/11, no requests to investigate who did Black Monday. The government media complex is the problem. That is why you hear no one like me on the radio ever. That is why I am castigated as an enemy of the people, when in fact I may be the only major voice of the people in the media. Make no mistake about it. I may be the only consistent voice of the media.
Savage.
Who can forget one-arm Frank's horrible breath while making love by the sewer plant, or me getting dead man's pants, or me eating a diet that would kill, I don't know, anybody? Or how about Tippy the dog being thrown in a garbage truck after he died, or me reading when pasta was spaghetti, or the electric blue saddle-stitched pants that were ripped off my legs, or my silent brother? They are all in Psychological Nudity, my new autobiography. Go to michaelsavage.com and order it now to make sure you reserve a copy. Psychological Nudity.
Savage.
Ohio, Bill, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. Yeah, you bring up some good points. A couple things. And what I have a little bit of trouble with is just understanding that with Iran, that they actually, that is the second largest home to Jews outside of Israel, is Iran. There are 35,000 Jews that live there in peace by choice, as do a 250,000 Christians, Assyrian Christians. Two kosher restaurants, one library, one hospital, 11 synagogues in Tehran.
So I don't understand your point.
Your point was he wants to kill every Jew in the world.
No, he said he wants to wipe Israel off the map. So let's say 3 million Jews. That's okay? Because he'll let the other 35,000 live?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't understand. So if he lets 35,000 live as sort of show Jews in a show synagogue in Tehran, that's okay for you as long as some Jews live, then 5 or 3 million could be killed.
Well, he likens them as Sephardic Jews or true Jews, not the Ashkenazi, Russian, you know, Turkish.
I see. So it's up to him to decide who a Jew is, just like Hitler? Would he like every Jew in the world to drop their pants?
Would I?
Yes.
No, absolutely.
Well, but you're saying that he's a reasonable man. You're starting to say that he's a reasonable man. So you also deny the Holocaust, Bill?
Well, no, I do not. I know that some horrors took place, but the Auschwitz Memorial, it was changed in 91, Mike, to 1.1 million dead, originally from 6 to 4. Now
you said some horrors took place. I see. So what, it was a mere few who died from the flu?
I think it was exaggerated. Typhoid, Mike.
Typhoid. They died from typhoid. I see. So you're denying denying that the Christians were killed as well?
No, absolutely not. But the Bromberg Massacre, Mike, started World War II in Germany invading Poland, where Polish Jews slaughtered 5,500 Germans, priests.
So Jews killed themselves. They were responsible for their own Holocaust.
Well, the Danzig Corridor, the Bromberg Bloody Massacre, people can research it on the Internet.
Well, of course there are Holocaust deniers like you all over the world. Bill, why are you not in Tehran with David Duke, your blood brother?
Mike, I'm just a historian. I have a...
No, you're not. You're a Holocaust denier like David Duke.
Not at all. But it is interesting
to... I've spent 2.5 hours reading to you. I spent 2.5 hours appealing to you. But the sickness in your soul is so deep, Bill. So you would like to see the Jews of Israel killed, the 3 million Jews annihilated, Bill?
Mike, I can't refute facts. There are 35,000 Jews in...
No, but I'm asking you. So do you agree with Ahmadinejad that the Jews of Israel should be killed? That's all I need an answer on, please.
No, I do not think that the Jews should be killed. I think it's time for peace. Iraq had 14 UN violations. Israel has 70. It's the world's most. I think Israel is a...
So the UN now is your idea of a fair and balanced organization. This is the same UN that hates America is a UN that you ascribe to?
Well, Mike, it is what it is. You know,
what do you mean? What do you mean it is what it is? The UN is anti-American and anti-Israel. Do you know why? We're the only ones who stand up to their evil.
To whose evil, Mike?
Don't you understand the evil of the UN? Don't you understand what I'm saying to you? Why is it that the outrage of the UN is limited to the United States and to Israel? Why is there no outrage in the UN about the slaughter of the Christian blacks in the Sudan by Arab Muslims? Can you tell me that?
Mike, they've had pagan, but they're pagans, okay? Well, you've had Hutus and Tutsis, all kinds of problems.
Wait, who's pagans? The UN in the UN we have pagans running the UN?
Rwanda, Sierra Leone, those are Hutus and Tutsis in Rwanda killing each other.
No, it is not, sir. You're distorting history again. You see, the blind hatred that you have for the Jews has so distorted your inner eye that you're distorting the reality of the Sudan. In the Sudan, it is Arab Muslims who are slaughtering Christians in the Darfur region. Everybody knows that who's been over there and studied it, Bill. Don't make that into something it isn't as well, if you don't mind.
Correct. Although I do think it's funded, Mossad and CIA, they're behind a lot of this terror.
Have a nice trip. You know, insanity is very hard to talk to. A man once described hell as a place where there is no reason. And it was described as such for good reason, because hell is a place where there is no reason. Right now, that hell is occurring not only in Bill's mind, inside the mind of the Venezuelan dictator, and, of course, inside the mind of all the leftists in America who do not understand what fire they are playing with.
Yeah.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Frank, welcome to the program from WRKO in Boston. How are you? How are you? How are you? What's on your mind, Frank?
How are you, Mike? It's good to talk to you again.
My friend, Frankie from Boston. What's happening?
Well, I wanted to call you. I'm going to Italy on Sunday. And
God bless. You're a lucky man. A lot of Italians go in this time of the year, huh?
It's a perfect time of the year. The weather is about the early 60s to mid 70s, depending on where you go, and there's not much rain. So, you know,
it's a beautiful, there's perfect autumn weather before, after the sun, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So I can't wait, man. I'm really looking forward to it. So I thought,
where are you going? Where are you going in Italy?
Well, we're going to Rome. We're heading to Venice, Florence. We're going to the Amalfi Coast, island of Capri. We're going to go to Modena, so we're going to hit the.
What are you going in to buy a Ferrari?
No Ferraris on this trip, Mike. Maybe the next one.
So, do you have family over there, Frank?
Well, there's a town over there. I'm not sure. I might have family there. We're going to go to a town that's after my last name, so I don't know if we took the town's name or.
It wouldn't be Corleone, would it?
No, not Corleone. No.
So, what are you going to eat over there, Frank?
I'm going to eat everything that I see, Mike, and I'm going
to stop it now. But what are you really looking forward to that you can't get in Boston?
Just the whole cuisine over there is different than in America, Mike. You know, and
well, I got a friend who owns a Sicilian restaurant in North Beach. I like eating there a lot. So he tells me that when he goes to Sicily, where he has a house, he said, Michael, he said the people eat for 3 hours at night. They eat slowly, not like you. He says they take course after course, and they converse. He knows I call him in advance and say, make this. I come in, I eat, boom, have a drink, and leave. He said, we don't eat that way. I said, I can't help you. But he said, we sit, and we talk, and we chat. They don't watch television. It's a different world, isn't it?
It's a different world. It's much slower. They enjoy life better, and that's why they live longer. So I'm going to dip my bread.
I wish I would be there with you, Frank. My traveling days are frankly over. I did a lot of great traveling when I was young. The kids were younger. I don't travel as much anymore. To me, being on that airplane is a torment beyond. You know that poor woman who got handcuffed and died in the prison in Phoenix Airport a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
I fear that every time I get near an airport, that if I say one wrong word, they're going to shackle me and put me in a back room.
Well, I don't like airplanes either, Mike, but, you know, I got to do this before I die. So.
It's like rigidity on the plane. I flew back from Miami the other day. I swear to God, God bless them, they were the nicest flight crew in the world. There was no water in the toilet. For 6 hours, the crew, you should go in the bathroom, there's no water in the sink. I couldn't believe this. I said, wait a minute. If the crew that put water in the sink forgot to put water in the sink, maybe they forgot to put hydraulic fluid in the steering gear? I mean, what's going on here?
Well, I'm going to try to not keep those thoughts, Mike, and just...
No. I didn't mean to bum you out. Enjoy every minute of it. Take 3 10-milligram Valium and a bottle of red wine, and you'll be there before you know it.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
Hey, God bless you. Tell me when you find Scungili over there. You better eat that Scungili before the global warming kills them, or before the Global Warming Committee eats them. One or the other, I don't know. It was quite a flight. It wasn't bad. I even had a meal. It was a sandwich in first class. Have you ever seen cuisine like this? I never saw anything like this. Like fifth grade school lunches in the Bronx in the 1950s were better than what's served as first-class food. I mean, you've heard every joke in the world. It's unbelievable to me. I never saw anything like this. You pay through the nose. It's not an upgrade. And you have a choice between a roast beef sandwich that you wouldn't give to a prisoner, let's say, in Mississippi in the 50s wouldn't eat this. It's like congealed roast beef. I'm afraid to go to the bathroom on a plane for fear I'll be arrested. Like, let's say the bathroom's, like, busy, the middle one. And you're, like, afraid to go now to the front bathroom near the pilot's door. I'm afraid they think I'm a terrorist. I swear to God, it's like I don't want to sit next to a young child. She could say I touched her. You can get arrested just for sitting next to him. I don't want him near me. Get him away from me. Don't bring no kid near me. I don't want to know them. Don't even bring him near me. Don't put him in a chair next to me. Her mother could say I looked at her wrong. You could wind up in jail for 90 years. Same thing with the bathroom. They put it, like, who's always on those planes, 757s, they're right next to the pilot's locked door, right? So, like, if you go in that little, you know, channel there between the kitchen area and the pilot's door, you have to literally go in that alleyway toward the pilot's door to get into the toilet. At that point, my heart starts to race that, like, a marshal could jump up and hit me over that and take me to a chair because they thought I was going to the pilot's door. It's so crazy. No wonder the woman went nuts at the airport. It could happen to any of us. It's a sad story, that one. What happened to her? What do you think happened to that poor woman, Gottbaum? You know, I mean, I didn't even talk about that story, about the Gottbaum story. The woman, she was going to alcohol treatment, Arizona. Okay, she had trouble with drinking. That's not a crime. Millions of people do. So then, okay, so she goes nuts at the airport. She gets there late for the flight. She becomes hysterical, starts causing a disturbance. Why did they have to shackle her? I don't get that part of it. Can anyone explain to me why they had to treat her like that? What, was she an animal? Now, there was a problem, number one, in how they constrained her. She was not an animal. She was a distressed woman. They overreacted to do this to her. And what it did is it caused a panic in her. But, and here's a big but, the family was wrong, too. If she was A, suicidal, as they are saying, and B, going to treatment, they should have accompanied her, or the clinic should have sent an attendant to be with her. She never should have been on that plane alone. That's A. However, what happened to her is what frightens all of us at airports today. There's an overkill. She was a white middle-class woman who was obviously not a terrorist. They treated her as though she was, you know, one of the 19 hijackers about to take down the airport. They had no right to do that to her. There's something wrong with this picture. I don't know how she could have strangled herself. Truthfully, I can't figure it out. How could she have strangled herself in that room? Although I did see it, they cuff her behind the back. They shackle her feet like an animal. You hear, like an animal in a concentration camp. And then they put a stainless steel wire on the back of her handcuffs to a table. So she panicked. Why must they be treated when they make a little mistake like they're about to blow up the World Trade Center?
Savage.
To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
WTNT, boy, we're getting them all out of Washington today. Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
It's good to talk to you. You know, what really I enjoy the best about your show is when you go into the stories of one-armed Frank and, you know, growing up in the five boroughs. We had a Tom the Bum and young kids running down the subway. We learned charity from Tom the Bum.
Hold it. You're going to tell us a story. Quick, Tom the Bum, I'm listening.
Okay, Tom the Bum, he had one arm also, and he would stay in the subways, and our mothers used to, you know, he was like the horror show. He used to run down there, run on the other side.
Yeah, all right. So, right, you went down to see him. It was like a Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Right, but your mother would send you down there with food, and you'd, like, push the food with your foot. You'd say, hey, Tom, eat this, because he was an alcoholic, you know. But he had one.
Oh, but you didn't want to actually touch him. That was absolutely because you could get leprosy.
You don't know what you're going to get. You know, you're scared, you're a little kid. But, you know, we learned charity with this guy. Tom the Bum was one of the best surgeons in the neighborhood. He cut his arm off because he lost a patient, and he became an alcoholic.
Wait a minute. Did you just make that up?
No, this is not. This is true, Mike. This is true. Tom the Bum.
What do you mean? He was a doctor who lost a patient, and he hated himself and cut his arm off?
became an alcoholic and cut his arm off, and he lived in the subways. So we had to take care of him.
He sounds like a saint. The guy's like a saint, the story.
You know, but that's where we learn charity. You know, like these one-armed Franks, Tom the Bum. We all have stories. But it's the greatest thing to turn on the radio, hear the music, think about the old stories, you know, the 50s, the 60s, the Goomba.
Well, where did you grow up, Mike?
Downtown New York, Grand Street.
Oh, you were Lower East Side. And what, you were Italian?
Italian-American.
Yeah, I can hear it in your accent. So how are you? I'm saying it as a compliment. But how do you relate to the society today? Given the rich background you had, how do you relate to the society today? What do you see in the everyday life, Mike?
It's terrible. The kids don't.
That's all. See, this is what I like about New Yorkers. They give you a straight answer, not a hem and a haw and a this and a that and a paragraph and then a sentence, then another paragraph. Bingo, it's terrible. 1-800-449-8255. All of the stories I didn't get to today are on michaelsavage.com, and I do have them updated 7 days a week for your viewing pleasure.
Savage.
WOR, Harold, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Okay, here I am. It's New York. It's hot. It's sticky. I'm living on salads and water now. And all of a sudden, my mind wanders back to when I'm a little boy. I'm back in Brooklyn with my sister, my mother, my father, my aunt, my uncle. We're in my grandmother's house. It's hot. It's summertime in my grandmother's house. Nobody had AC. They didn't know what AC was. The windows are open. There's fans blowing everywhere. The woman is cooking. Six people are coming over. She's making food for 20. Little tiny apartment. Big table, food is coming out. What is she making? First, it's a big brisket full of heavy beef. It's hot.
Wait. You mean on a very hot day now? You're talking suffocating heat, but she's still making brisket.
Yes, it's hot. She's making brisket.
Her theory is what? If you're suffering from the heat, you need a good meal?
You have to eat. You have to eat. Absolutely.
That's how they thought. It was unbelievable. But you say, well, why do you need such a heavy meal? And what would the answer be? There was always some reason that you needed a heavy meal at all seasons, whether it was globally hot or globally cold. You always needed a heavy, greasy meal.
Not only a heavy, greasy meal, but you had to be heavy. If you were heavy, you were healthy. If you were thin, you were not healthy.
Yes, they'd ask you, what's the matter with you? I remember when I left home, I moved away for a number of years, and I moved out to Hawaii, went to the Fiji Islands. I came back, normal weight. Normal weight. They said, what's the matter with you? Are you sick?
Here's the one that I remember. She would make potatoes, mashed potatoes, but she would save the greasy drippings from the chicken fat.
She would put
chicken fat in the potatoes, mash it up, and
did your father live a long life, or did he go by the way of Cedars-Sinai cardiac division?
Actually, that's an interesting story. You and I did my father's death one night on the radio. He made it to 91, very healthy, thank God.
Even though he ate that gravy?
Yes, absolutely. 91.
So what was his secret? Now top it off and tell me that he smoked.
No. My father actually did smoke, but he quit probably 35 years before he passed.
But how did he live to 92 eating greasy, heavy food?
Want to know? My father walked 5 miles a day every single day. The man was 85 years old. I used to fight with him. Dad, don't
go. Okay, but Harold, here's the secret. You don't know where he was walking to and what he did when he got there.
Very good. No, I'm not.
It wasn't the walking. It was where he was going. Don't worry, I'm going for a walk. Where? Never mind, I need exercise. You don't know where he was going.
I didn't know where he was going. He was going to save money on the bread. Believe me, he'd walk 5 miles to save some money on the loaf of bread in Walbaum's or wherever in Key Food. That was my
Oh, that's a funny story. God bless him. So your website is up finally. We had a little slowdown today. So you ate a heavy meal, and everyone lived long and happy anyway.
Yeah, it was a beautiful...
Let me ask you, after the meals in the family, wasn't it true that the men folk would sit on the couch gagging and opening their pants?
Fall asleep right away.
Holding their stomach, and the pants would be open. I don't mean in a naughty way. They'd open the top button and lean. Oh, and the meal wasn't good. The women didn't feel that they did the right thing until the men were like hurting. They had to sit down and go, oh. Now compare that to this generation. Hair plugs, everyone's got a personal trainer. They're all in shape. They're all drop dead younger anyway.
What I remember the most is my uncle. Every time after my uncle ate, every single time, my uncle would say, oh, I ate too much.
Yeah, that's a standard one. How about even now, if I go to dinner with family, I hear the same thing after we finish. Like, let's say we went to sushi last night. So we ate no shrimp, but we ate this, that. So, you know, it really was enough just to this. But the meal, you know, the main courses came anyway, we ordered, and everyone eats them. We eat because it feels good to eat. Isn't that true?
Yes, we eat because it feels good to eat. It's also, in my culture, it's in bread. They stuffed it to me. Eat, 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 till I learned later on, I don't want to eat so much. It's enough.
Yes. Oh, no, you can control the eating, the pleasure through eating. There's a way to control that as well. It's all meant. You can drink more water, you know. Let's go to Chris now. Chris, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, this is Chris. I just wanted to let you know real quick. I haven't met my girlfriend through you. You actually are responsible in a way. I've been dating her for 7 months now, through the MySpace, which, I mean, MySpace ain't the best thing in the world.
Wow. How did you meet your girlfriend through me and MySpace? What was the connection?
She was browsing around one night, and through a girl who I knew up here in New York. She actually lives in Florida, but actually just moved up here now. We've been together 7 months. I have a very patriotic page, and she saw my Michael Savage book that I had pasted online on my page itself. And she
wow, that's unbelievably great. You know, that's an idea. Why doesn't everyone listening who has some kind of MySpace page looking for someone put up a picture of my book in their hand? I'll bet you immediately it becomes a symbol of people who find each other. And do it with my blessing. I don't need to make any money from it. You know, that's as simple as any method of immediately defining yourself.
Absolutely.
What a great idea. So what, you had a picture of the book on the page, she saw it and figured that you're politically compatible, and the next thing you know, you're in love.
I had a picture of liberalism is a mental disorder up on there, and she was...
Well, you know something, it's A, it's true, but B, I guarantee you that when conservatives meet like this through a dating thing, they immediately have something to bond them, which is their shock stories of dating liberals over the years. You could talk for ages about that.
Oh, I know, Michael. We get very fired up. I mean, I love what you do because there's really no one out there with a mouth. I'm a woman with a mouth, I love to tell. I mean, I'm always out. Politics always come up, whether I'm at parties or whatever. And me and her are always going at it. You know, it's kind of funny.
Yeah. No, it's hard to do a day. It's hard to do a day and night, Chris. Glad you met a girlfriend through me with the MySpace and the book.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
What I want to talk about briefly are the black preachers of yesteryear, some of whom still exist, by the way, who are kept down by the white liberal establishment who were never heard from. The white liberal establishment who keeps the black community down and suppresses the family-oriented and God-oriented preachers are who I want to salute today on the Savage Nation. You were listening to the voice of Reverend Dr. Gregory Sutton. You heard the voice of strength, masculinity, wisdom, power, and righteous anger. Now, I want you to ask yourself a question. I want you to compare the black youth of today with the black youth of 40 years ago. Before the so-called Great Society, the Great Liberal Society of Lyndon Baines Johnson with the Warren Liberal Court, tell me which generation is a healthier generation or was a healthier generation. Can you sit there and honestly say that this generation that has been turned away from God, turned to God knows what, to Ted Kennedy's company, Ted Kennedy and Company, saying you don't need a black father in the house and as a role model? What you need is Ted Kennedy and Company. The great white father will provide all for you through government. In liberalism, we trust. But before this, there were the black preachers keeping the people in believing, despite their great pain and humiliation of what the black people had gone through hundreds of years, the humiliation, the anger, and the suffering. And instead of channeling this into hatred and murder and violence, the preachers did, and some still do, channel it into goodness and to raising a family to the best of their abilities. And yet the white liberal masters, the Kennedys, the Kerrys, the Pelosis, who cast God out of the lives of the black people, are replacing it forever with the worship of the state, the liberal state at that, saying that you only need us to help you. You can't help yourself. But listen to the preacher. I was driving in my car yesterday, and I happened to accidentally turn on one of the higher numbered stations, and I heard one of the preachers. Now, I had been infatuated with such preaching as a youth. I've been infatuated with a guy named Brother Billy, who I met down on 42nd Street and 8th Avenue one day, preaching on a soapbox. And I drove him up to his little storefront church in Harlem, and I went into this church, and I never felt... I'll tell you the truth. I mean, I've been in places of worship before. Rarely have I found Rarely have I found or seen or been around a congregation so vibrant, let's put it to you that way, so vibrant, so vibrating with the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, as I did in that little storefront. Now you look at the Reverend Jackson and the Reverend Sharpton. They call themselves Reverend. Have you heard them use the name, the word God, in any of their preachings? Have you heard the great Reverend Jackson refer to Jesus or God in any of his preachings? And where does he preach, by the way, the great Reverend? And why do they refer to Sharpton as Reverend Sharpton on these shows? I can't believe the inauthenticity of these references. Why don't they ever refer to the real black preachers? Why don't they ever invite the real reverends, the Dr. Gregory Suttons, onto the television shows? I will tell you why. Because these men actually believe in the Word of God. These men are opposed to homosexual marriage. These men are opposed to the liberal lifestyle. These men are in love with the family. 50 years ago, there were vibrant black businesses across America. Small businesses at that, but tens of thousands of them. And along came the liberal revolution of the 1960s. The black family was destroyed by many forces, not the least, though, of which was the liberal court of Earl Warren, the presidency of Lyndon Baines Johnson, and, of course, the fraudulent promises of Ted Kennedy and the other great white fathers. As a result, they were told, don't listen to that Uncle Tom preacher. Why, he's just preaching the white man's word to keep you enslaved. So let's see, they broke the chains of slavery of the preacher and of the church. And look at the black youth today. You're telling me they're better off not listening to the preacher, not controlling their anger, not controlling their rage, not trying to channel some of the internal strife and the internal energies into a positive manner? No, my friends, I got to tell you right now that it was the preachers who kept the black families together, taught them how to take that terrible pain that they had suffered and work with it and work it. And today, look where we are as a result of the white liberal who claims to be the best friend of the black man. And take a look at the children today as a result of them telling to turn away from the church. Now, this is not the most important story in the world, but it's an important story for me today because, as I said to you, I truly believe only the Word of God can save not only the black community, but the white community as well. Why I'm looking at the black American community is only a product of my having heard the preacher on the radio yesterday and having heard some amazing, amazing preaching. That's all I can say to you. The man who said, if fear has entered a room in your mind, don't give him the keys to all the rooms in the house of your mind. Now, you say simplistic, but what about a person sitting in the audience who was touched and moved by that? Somebody who has been touched by some fear. Somebody who's been touched by some fear and is afraid that the fear will penetrate their entire soul. Now, who is going to lead them back? The doctor who gives them drugs? The jailer who gives them bars? The Reverend Sharpton who gives them bull crap? The Reverend Jackson who gives them a shakedown for himself, not for the guy who's suffering? No, my friend. It's not going to come from the liberal establishment. It's not going to come from the conservative establishment. It's not going to come from the Republican or the Democrat. It's not going to come from the talk shows. It's going to come from a turning back to the fundamental source of stability in the black community, and that was the Christian church. And by the way, it still exists. By the way, it's still vibrant. By the way, you don't know it's there because Hillary doesn't want you to see it. The true black church is there. It's still supporting a good many of the black people in this country. You never hear them. You never see them. You never hear from them. Why? Because they oppose the entire liberal agenda, primarily the homosexual agenda. And anything or anyone who gets in the way of the steamroller called the homosexual agenda becomes a nun person in this country. A nun person in this country. A persona non grata. I heard the preacher say to the audience yesterday, if you feel rejected, if you feel singled out, if you feel picked upon, he said, well, that's good because the founders of your religion were picked upon and rejected and ostracized by the people of their time. And the reason you're being picked upon and ostracized is because you're following the word of God. Chicago, Preston, you're on the Savage Nation. Your opinion, please.
Yeah, I'm a black male caller from Chicago. And, you know, I don't think the type of preacher that you're promoting or, you know, the one that you got on your show today, he's the type of preacher that we in the black community call a Negro preacher, because he's not teaching the true message of Jesus Christ. He's sitting around here raving and hollering, talking about the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. I mean, you're a smart man, Mr. Savage. You got a degree. You can't divide three into one. I mean, and first of all, I bet he has a white Jesus on his church wall anyway. And you know.
Oh, where is the disagreement? You're saying because he is Catholic, you don't agree with him?
I'm saying, that's part of it. That's part of it, because you study history and I do too. I'm not
Let me ask you, I'm not here to disagree or agree with you, Preston, because are you a churchgoer yourself?
I don't go to church, but I read the Bible and the Quran.
All right. So you understand the – and you haven't heard me bash Islam, have you, not with regard to the blacks, because it's a separate story that I want to talk about eventually, which is that any religious movement or any religion that brings people off the streets and away from drugs, as far as I'm concerned, is a good religion.
Now, I'm not saying that Christianity is a bad religion, Dr. Savage, but if you go to the root of where Christianity was founded, we know that it came from Constantine, who was someone who was not really a Christian, if you...
Whoa. No, you're talking about Constantine the Roman. You're not talking about the foundation of Christianity. Constantine didn't create Christianity. Constantine tried to instill Christianity in the Roman.
Exactly. He's the one who called the Council of Nice, in which the bishops around the Roman Empire came
but
together.
Look, I don't want to get lost in history and lose what we're talking about. I believe that the perfidious nature of the liberal senator from Massachusetts, the perfidious nature of the false preacher, the deceit through the trust. In other words, when you say perfidious, what am I referring to? I don't want to use a big word. I never do. It means to deceive by trust. So the liberal says, trust me, and then they deceive you. You can't argue that the black youth of today is doing better having turned away from God, Preston. I don't believe you are saying that.
Oh, no, man, my community is destroyed, and they're destroyed because of a lack of knowledge. I mean, and I can't make no excuses for them. You know, I love black people. You know, every people love their own first, Dr. Savage. I'm not.
Amen. And you're an honest man for saying that. And your heart's probably broken when you walk and look at the wreckage around you, the human wreckage with pants hanging down underneath their behinds.
I saw a guy like that today, and I told him, man, pull up your damn pants. Excuse me. I'm really for a law that you should be defined, or possibly if you get three strikes, you go.
No, I agree. I see white kids like that who I don't know, and I feel like saying, don't you have a father at home who's embarrassed by you? Walking around holding on to your pants like that? Like a jailhouse sissy who's just been molested?
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.